Bye-bye.
Love, that is, you interlock the two.
Now stretch them quite as
soccer, and the fifth.
Quiet, please. In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
I felt like a reptile, like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.
New one's got some good upgrades, to be honest. They put a HDMI in.
Yeah, but that was...
SD's card reader.
In my 2012, I had an SD card, USBs, everything.
Mm.
Then they took it out. So it's hardly an upgrade. It's just admitting a mistake.
Yeah. More of a downgrade, but an upgrade.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Right, you good?
Yeah. Yeah, welcome back.
You say we're rolling?
Yeah, we're rolling.
Do you want to introduce?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay, so John wanted to give you guys a bit of a break, so at least when you're editing this, you can grab the bit you need. Okay, so you say we're rolling in a minute, and then I'll say...
We are rolling.
No. Okay. Hello, and welcome to Full Reptile.
I'm probably going to keep all of that.
All of it? Yeah. Oh, fuck me. Okay. And the Apple bit and all the other shit. Yeah. Okay, fair enough. So, what? Oh, episode 5?
Episode 5, yeah.
Yeah, man. We had a week off. Obviously, Dan was away, so it's good to be back.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we mentioned... The last time we recorded, we're probably going to do it every other week. We are going to try and keep it to it weekly.
Yeah.
As much as we can.
Yeah, I think so.
There's so much to talk about. So it just seems like when we're catching up then, we're like, what have we missed?
Yeah, something happens a lot in this sport. So it's nice just to keep a consistent, whether that's news or just opinion from us, you know, we're going to try and keep it consistent for you guys as well. And maybe some extra content, you know, top five stuff.
Yeah.
I
think with the MMA world, it's very much chip paper that, like, I was consumed with 284. All I can do is look at Volk, look at Islam, and I'm just overdoing everything. But then if there's another fight this week and we're talking about Islam or next week, it's like you're not necessarily tuning in to want to listen to about a fight that you know the result to. Do you know what I mean? You know,
because
there's so many questions going into a fight. Who's going to win? How are they going to win? What's going to happen? And all the rest of it. But then once you know the result, when you're talking about that for 2 hours, you're like, well, you already know the result. So whatever someone's saying, it's difficult. So, yeah, man, it's one of them that...
Well, the 284, they were saying that they didn't promote it that much before it happened.
No.
It was all about the power slap thing and, just didn't really give much attention to it.
I didn't think so. And doing the picks, obviously... You edit the picks for the podcast and I do the graphics. But what I've noticed on the numbered card recently with UFC, back in the day, you would get a stacked card of names that, like Faber would be the headline in the prelims or something. Do you know what I mean? So Faber's normally a headliner, but he's then headlining the prelims. So like the card's that stacked. And obviously they've got the roster of people. And I know that we've got to give, obviously, up-and-comers a chance and all the rest of it. But the last couple of numbered cards I've done, the amount of prospects and people making their debut is at least 50-50.
Mm.
So, like, you can't even find graphics or statistics for these people because they're brand new. And it seems years ago, if you were a veteran, you would more often than not get a spot on the numbered card. Whereas now, it feels like maybe the top two or three fights, but then under that... It's not relatively unknown, but they are people making their debut. Or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Always good fights, but it's not the same sort of it's not the same stack.
Yeah, I always find they could spread it out more because you know, like weeks like this weekend, it's Aaron Blanchfield and Jessica Andrade.
Yes.
But then the rest of the card is kind of
they could
swap a few fights around to make those UFC fight nights a little bit more, you know, people up for it and they tune in every week.
I mean, I tune in regardless. I'm going to watch every fight every week, but that's because it's my football. It's my world. But I know I do speak to some people and I'll be like, oh, did you catch fights? I'm not even seeing them yet. And I think, fuck, how have you, like, I don't go anywhere near my phone, near the internet. I can't answer. I don't talk to people on Sunday. I wait and then I watch it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's Blanchfield against Andrade, whoever it is. I don't want to know the result. I want to watch it fresh. But there's something about having someone on the card that just flips the switch. And it could be like even someone like Matt Brown or like just some old school dude that like you recognize and you've got a bit of a relationship with them that you're looking forward to it. Because obviously you've got to have new fighters and they've got to be coming through. But because the volume of events that we have now, you don't overdose on the same people. Like back in the day when it was the Miletic fighting team. So you got like Pat Miletic, Matt Hughes, Tim Sylvia, Jens Pulver. They'd fight quite often on same cards, but because it was every 3 months or 6 months or whatever, like you'd get to learn and really like study these people. Whereas now, because there's so many new people and so much new talent, it's only like during the introduction to the fight, like, that's that dude, that's that crazy motherfucker. Oh, okay, yeah. And then you're pumped again. But like this, it's not the same sort of concentration as it used to be.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think that's just with the growth of the sport, I guess there's so many fighters on the roster now. It's just,
man,
they have to put, kind of fill in those fight nights with those up and coming people.
Yeah. Well,
but especially with, like, obviously 284 was in Australia as well. So you got a lot of local talent and I think that's pretty cool when you get.
I do like it when they do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like years ago, if you ever get to watch it, it was America versus Canada on an airbase. Dude, such a good card. And it was, even though it was America, Canada, it was really fucking good. And like, I know obviously they did the Smashers Tough, which was England against Australia. And they've done season 9 was America versus England, which is obviously Andre Williams was in. So it's good when they do pitch it that way. But it's, I think it's a double-edged sword because there's so many people coming through.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to try and, I mean, I can't memorize shit like I used to be able to. I think it's just getting old. But it's like when I watched Bellator the other day and it was such a strange feeling because obviously Fedor and Bader fought, but then the roster of people that were there to support Fedor
stage after.
Dude.
Yeah.
It was so good. But like, even like Chuck has got the biggest beer belly. He's always had a belly. Always, but he's got this big beer belly. And even Fedor went and rubbed it afterwards, and he was like, oh. But like, there was, is it Emblem, the guy that fought before him for a title?
Oh, Josh. Oh, you mentioned him. He looked good.
Amazing. Mm. Like, he was fighting one of Fedor's proteges that is essentially a killer. Bit like Islam, great wrestler, obviously Sambo and all the rest of it were from Fedor. But he took him to fucking school. Mm. He looked really good. And obviously, I think Dan was talking about it before with Islam and Volk, where he said, look, Islam's not been to the fifth round. And also, when you can't dominate someone like you think you can, how does it affect you mentally, physically, and all the rest of it? And the Emblem fight was very similar to that because it wasn't a simple, I'm going to hold you down and fuck you up. It was more a case that, oh shit, you're back on your feet. All right, now. And when you got to replan that, even though you've had 10 fights by being dominant and being able to impose your will, as soon as that's changed, like the your brain goes a bit scrambled.
Yeah. I mean, it did seem like that happened in the Islam Volk fight.
Do you think?
Well, I think, yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think if it went one more round, then Volk could have definitely,
yeah,
like took it and probably, I don't know. It just, yeah, it did seem a little bit like the Makhachev. He kind of broke his spirit a little bit, I thought.
Yeah. What surprised you more than anything with the fight?
Nothing really surprised me, I wouldn't say, because I didn't think that Islam would be able to, I don't know, it was a tough one because there's so many outcomes that could have happened. I was back in Volk because I prefer him as a fighter.
Yeah.
But I had a feeling that Islam could probably submit him, but so nothing, it wasn't really a surprising fight. It was just, I thought it could have gone either way, to be honest.
Who do you think won?
I thought Islam won probably overall, but because I thought I gave the first and the second and the fourth to Islam and third and fifth to Volk.
Well, Volk seemed to be getting some momentum from the third, which was...
Like, yeah,
because I don't think he looked in trouble necessarily in the first and second, but he wasn't particularly pulling the trigger or making the full escape. Because obviously, the problem is, especially with jiu-jitsu, is it's so finite. Like, you can sit there comfortable and look like you're not in danger, but it only takes a split second to make the wrong move, twist the wrong way, whatever it is. And obviously Volk knows that. But even though in the first round you feel like you've got another 20 minutes to make up for it, you've kind of got to pull the trigger. And that happened, in my opinion, more in the third. Because obviously...
Yeah, I just don't think he started fast enough.
No.
Like, he held back, I think, for the first couple of rounds. And like he said, I think he gave him a little bit too much respect.
Yeah. And being smothered is terrifying. Like, it doesn't matter how big and how strong and how tough you are. When someone has got that pedigree of wrestling that has been essentially just drilled into him in such a precise way, and obviously all the footage you're watching of him is him dominating people.
Yeah.
Then you can see why Volk maybe not underestimated the striking, but wasn't necessarily focusing on that. And that's why he was getting caught a bit more, because it wasn't, I know it put him to his knee on the first, but it wasn't like it was killing him.
No, I mean, if you look at both their faces at the end of the fight, I mean, I don't know what those like kind of strikes were doing, because his Islam looked a bit like worse off in terms of damage, but it was just, I think he just kind of maintained control of him.
Yeah.
I think he was even saying that he's getting strikes off, but he's been in a body lock as well at the same time.
Yeah,
so
he's got a triangle around your waist. And I think for me, when I was watching it, I kind of, towards the end of the fifth, I was like, he could have this. Because the problem is, I've watched that many fights and the judges are that fucking terrible that literally it could always go either way. Like, it is literally in the judges' hands. And when I was watching it round by round, I felt like, I don't know if I wanted it to be Volk, so I was trying to give him more, but I couldn't give him more than two. And then I think the people that wanted Volk to have the win was almost because he survived Makhachev. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So he didn't finish him, but he didn't get dominated to the point where he was drowning. And Makhachev's face looked worse. But that's like, if you've won three and he's won two, it's just simple. Like, any which way you cut it, like, he could have smashed the shit out of him in the fifth. He still won 2-3. Yeah. So,
because when it came to the, obviously, announcing the winner, I wasn't like surprised by the result. It was like, oh, I got robbed. So yeah. And there's always that element of like, oh, you need to beat the champion or whatever to, you know, get a finish or whatever. But
would that put,
I think like if they fought again, I'd be pretty confident that Volk, if he started a bit faster and because he looked like he could go like another five rounds, even after the fight. So
But
he's definitely got the conditioning just to like put it on him, like from the start.
I think with Habib's camp and Islam's camp, they learn from, because they don't make a lot of mistakes and they don't have to take a lot of learning from their fights because they're so dominant. And I think it's a bit like GSP when he lost to Matt Serra.
Yeah.
Like, he underestimated him, but when he came back, fucking hell, he took his dinner money and some. So I think as much as Volk now feels like he's got the ingredients because he's been there, and it's like doing your driving test, isn't it? The first time you're nervous, the second time you know what to expect.
Yeah.
And I think with Volk, I think I would say, I would probably back him again. But I think Islam has also got areas to improve, especially if it means it's the cardio, because not only being dominant in wrestling, but just pressure is exhausting. And it's a strange feeling to have if you've never been that exhausted that you just can't do something. It's kind of terrifying. And obviously when you're in front of thousands of people and this is your livelihood, it's a strange place to be. And I'm not saying that Islam was completely spent, because he wasn't, but it just felt, I don't know, with Volk, he put on a good show. He went up a weight class and I don't think he did himself any injustice, but I still would class Volk probably more as the pound for pound than Islam.
Yeah, well, that's what they've decided now, that he's remained the pound for pound, hasn't he, Volkanovski?
Yeah, and I think it's right, because it's your resume. Like, I struggle with pound for pound a little bit, because I know pound for pound means it could be anyone because it's what they weigh. But, like, I can't get past John Jones. I can't, like, there's so many elements of people, even like GSP, like who you've beaten, how you beat them and how you got there. And especially, like, we've got so many different eras to the sport. So when steroids were in the sport, and I know it sounds insane, but like, let's just pretend everyone was doing it. That's a different fucking, that's a different ball game. And especially like when the game hasn't been quite refined as it has now, that people weren't training all disciplines. So like some champs were dominant, like Matt Hughes was dominant for wrestling and taking people down and stifling them. Not in a Khabib way, but he won majority that way. Do you know what I mean? So like the pound for pound, it's, if you could do it between a few years.
Yeah, I know what you mean about the, I think it's, it should be dependent on your resume. Like if you look at Islam's fights.
Who's he beat?
Yeah. Yeah. He's because it, even before he got the title fight against Oliveira, he was set to fight,
Dariush? I can't remember.
Was it Dariush? And then that fight got, and he fought Bobby Green instead. Yeah. And then previous to that was the Dan Hooker fight. And yeah, I know he was on that like crazy win streak and, you know, but I think the people that Volkanovski has beat of recent, like he's beat Max Holloway three times. Beat Jose Aldo.
Yeah.
Like Zombie. They're the two best featherweights ever. Yeah. Like, there's no argument really, I think, just in terms of who he's beat. Yeah, Volkanovski should be still.
Do you think the opinion is slightly through association with Khabib? So if
I think that plays a part. But no, not really.
Well, you look at Khabib when he came through and he was dominant and he was taking people out. He wasn't going to a decision. He was taking people out that were contenders. So like your Dan Hookers and your Oliveiras. Obviously, he beat Oliveira the champ and he finished him.
Mm.
And obviously, when Khabib was coming up, it wasn't a lot of decisions. He was taking people out.
Yeah.
And obviously, it was the narrative. He was just on that train, like moving, like, look, I'm going to be the champ. Just give me the shot. And I think a lot of that is almost not a mirror image, but it's a similar path because Islam is so similar to him with his dominant wrestling and all the rest of it that you almost make that association. And then by default, he almost gets this pound for pound. And the problem is he's not finished enough.
Well, he's not really even, he's not fought. I mean, if you look at the top five of the lightweight division, like he's not fought Michael Chandler, I know.
Poirier.
His thing is, yeah, Poirier, Gaethje, and Ferguson. I mean, he beat Oliveira, obviously, who had, you know, beat all those. But yeah, I don't know if he's been, I don't think he's been fully tested in that division just yet. I mean, I do think he would come out on top pretty much against everyone, but I think he still needs to prove that domination over his division before he can be.
You got to see it to justify it, right? Yeah. And I'm not saying he's not good because he's really good and impressive and all the rest of it. But I'm not taking anything away from him and his stature in the sport or his position in the sport. But it's just pound for pound overall. Like when you've got someone like Demetrius Johnson, you've got someone like John Jones. Like, man, like
still active fighters as well.
Yeah, for real. Like DJ, as much as he didn't move the needle that much, he took the best of the competition in his weight class.
Man, I keep seeing that move, that armbar he got.
Mate,
who was
flying
it?
He's an archer.
He's got like four letter surname.
Yeah, it's not Danny Gay.
Ray Borg.
Yes, he was Ray Borg. But even Ray looked like armbar. He was doing all right. But
DJ that was insane. Like flying armbar.
Yeah, and the thing is, that is the top of the tree in that division. So as much as you can go, Ray Borg might not be the same as a Machida or as a Chuck Liddell, but you can only fight who's in front of you.
Yeah, I suppose pound for pound goes on like active records and active fighting. So I can understand because, I mean, we were speaking about it before we started, like John Jones, if you're going to say who's the best ever and pound for pound, it's probably still John Jones.
Mate, you can't, because the light heavyweight has been the most strongly contested division, in my opinion, that the guys are almost superstars when they get to the point where they're facing John Jones. So it's such a big thing. Mm. And the fact that he's like seen them all off, like even when GSP was in his prime and he fought Johnny Hendricks, everyone thought he'd lost, but he took the win as a decision. But it was almost like he knew he was ready to be done at that point. Whereas John Jones is still, he's still fucking doing it, man. He's coming back. I'm really looking forward to seeing him against Garn. But it's one of them where it's the same thing with Volk. You're going up a weight class, but he could come in and steamroll it like he did with Shogun.
Yeah, it's going to be, it's very exciting seeing him back. especially at heavyweight.
Mate. And then it'd be interesting because the light heavyweight seems so unsettled at the
minute.
Well,
that's the thing. Like, the people he's beat already in the light heavyweight division, like Teixeira.
Yeah.
Like, what he did to him, and he was at an earlier stage in his career. Like, he'd run through the light heavyweight division now, I think, still.
Yeah.
John Jones.
Does the belt have the same weight as it did when John Jones had it around his waist, as it does with Jamal Hill?
Hmm.
And it's not taking anything away from Jamal Hill, because obviously he's a up-and-coming fighter and he's won the belt fair and square. But the Yuri and the John Jones of these of this industry just...
That would be an interesting one.
Mate.
Yuri and Jones.
Yeah. And I can see him coming down. I can see him grabbing the belt, grabbing the heavyweight belt, and then going, do you know what? While Jamal's got it, I know that Yuri's out for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I just come back, snatch that one up.
Yeah, it's going to make things interesting, the heavyweight, because obviously with all the Ngannou stuff and he's gone and there's no real, like, superstar in the heavyweight division with the,
no.
before him. So it's good that Jones is back and it kind of stirs thing up again.
Yeah.
And it might even eventually lure Ngannou to come back.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, maybe. I could see it happening, or like, because it's still the fight to make, really, in that heavyweight,
yeah.
baddest man on the planet.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like the Bellator thing at the minute, because obviously Fedor was there as a face and a name, but once you watch the fight, he didn't really need to be in there anymore. Mm. It was time. I mean, I thought it was a bit shitty of Dana that obviously when they were talking about it in the press conference and they said, oh, it's Fedor's last fight and all the rest of it, and he's got so many people there, and it doesn't take a lot to be... not be critical about it. Like, it's like, yeah, well, I don't think he's ever been the best and he probably should have hung it up a while ago. And you think, fuck, man. Like, I don't know. I don't know if it's just that, you know, that really awkward uncle that can't ever apologise or admit he's wrong.
Yeah.
He just doubles down and just looks more like Uncle Dickhead. And you think, come on, man. Like, I don't know. He just, I know that's his personality.
What did you think to the Dan Hooker tweets?
Excuse me.
I only saw it. Which ones were they?
About Islam using IV.
Yeah, well, I saw the one about the IV, but then someone had said that was a post. That was a media image.
Oh, okay.
So, as much as it looks like it's a.
Oh, so Dan Hooker didn't tweet that he'd used it or accused him.
No, I think Dan Hooker accused him. But then someone was replying to that and said, that's immediate. You know the immediate day images when they're stood shadow boxing and they just take all the pictures?
Oh, right, yeah.
And so he was like, no, that was not... Because the IV would be after the weigh-in.
Yeah.
So you're not going to take a media day picture. The weigh-in's what, Friday?
Yeah.
So you're not then going to take media day pictures after they've weighed in.
Ah, right.
Does that make sense?
So they were using that as an example...
No, so the picture that Dan Hooker was talking about where there's a big red welt on his arm, you know that one?
Yeah, yeah.
What someone had said was that wasn't taken after the fight. That was taken for media day pictures before, and he's not going to use an IV before weighing.
Yeah.
You use it afterwards. But the thing is...
I think that they probably, if they were going to hear about something like that, it would probably be like an inside, you know, like a rumour, I don't know, like... chatter around the hotel or something.
Mate, those hotels are mad busy. You know, you've been there, I've been there. And it's one of them where there's so many different conversations and so many different things happening all the time that there are going to be people that know certain things and obviously they know all the secrets. But, I mean, it'd be a shame. Right? You know what it feels like when, was it Chael Sonnen and Anderson Silva when he popped for steroids after, like, he literally dominated Anderson Silva for 22 and a half minutes and then... got triangled, which was weird. But then at the same time, even if he had won, he popped for steroids anyway. And you're like, oh, fuck, man.
Yeah. Well, what is an IV? Is it? It's like hydration, right?
Intravenous, yeah. Drip.
Yeah.
So it's like a hydration drip.
So it's
drip.
like a really fast way to rehydrate.
Yeah. So I don't know all the laws and rules about it, but they were trying to stop it because the weight cut was dangerous. And then they could basically drop down to a lower weight class, say 160. And then they would go I back see, up to like right, 185. Yeah, yeah. So you're fighting like a middleweight.
Extreme weight cutting. And
yes.
Then, and a quick, easy, fast way to just rehydrate afterwards. Yeah.
And you know people about fainting on the scales and passing out. And I mean, I can't remember if it was Bama. It could have been Bama or Cage Warriors or something. I mean, I don't know the exact promotion that it was for. So I'm not accusing anyone of doing anything dodgy. But one guy had weighed in and he came back and he had like three or four bags.
Really?
Straight away. And I was like, the fuck just is like, that going?
Plug me in.
Yeah. And literally just... And it was that blowing up a Lilo. I was like, dude, are you all right? And,
yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. And it's one of them. Like you think if you've got lightweight, middleweight or whatever it is, or middleweight to light heavyweight, that's a big lump. Mm-hmm. That's a lot different. And I mean, I suppose it's evident, like when Dan fought, Johnson Rumble. And you think, man, they were like 170, 160, whatever it was. But then Rumble struggled to make middleweight.
Yeah.
Struggled. And then struggled to make light heavyweight. And then struggled. And you think, how the fuck? And his frame.
Was that a catch weight that Dan fought at?
No, was it fuck?
It was welterweight.
Yeah.
Damn.
But then obviously Rumble's walk around weight was heavyweight.
Yeah. I mean, when you see videos of him, he's just like massive.
Tonk.
Yeah.
He was fucking tonk. And the problem is, like Dan said, when he knew him. He knew him well. And when he met him, like they faced off, he was thinking, why is there two of you like glued together? He's fucking huge.
Yeah.
And so it is a massive disadvantage. And obviously I'd be keen to know if anything did happen, I'd be well interested. But the problem is the UFC have to protect their investments as well.
Mm. Was Volkanovski mentioned it on the, he only briefly said it about the IV.
Yeah.
But he kind of almost dropped it in and then just brushed it off as like a joke or I don't know.
Well, I don't think Volk's the type of person that would look for an excuse, because the problem is, he's the type of guy that goes, look, they say he won. I disagree, but it's one of them. I move forward.
He's brilliant. He's such a professional. You know, when you just see him at media days and
he's
like,
a dude.
He looks like someone's took like that rugby player personality and just put it in the UFC. It's pretty cool to see.
He's such a nice bloke. Yeah. But it's a bit like, you know, when Bisping fought Rashard. So Rashard won season two of the Ultimate Fighter, Bisping won season three. And Bisping's always had a mouth on him. And they were both unbeaten. I think Bisping actually won at heavyweight. So when he did Ultimate Fighter season three, I think it was, don't quote me, I might be wrong, but I think it was for heavyweight, which is fucking bonkers. And him and Rashard fought. And the big thing going into that was like, who's going to lose their unbeaten streak? And I think sometimes with fighters, it almost gets in the way that they've got this zero because they're so busy worried about, they don't want to lose that they're not, it's not the same sort of focus. And for Bisping, because he took Rashard to the decision or Rashard took him to a decision, it was easier to sort of go, yeah, I've lost my zero, but all the pressure went off, but that one doesn't really matter as much as you think it does because it went to a decision, you could be like, well, I still thought I won.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know
what
I mean? So it's tricky, man. It is tricky with the tricks and the towel fucking grabs and the IVs and all these different things. It's just it's not as neutral as it seems to be because there's so many different little loopholes you can sort of get away with.
It'd be interesting. I mean, people don't make accusations like that, you know, loosely, I guess.
Not out loud.
So yeah, I don't know. See what comes out of it, I guess, but. Yeah, it'd be a shame. But I think they should definitely fight again. I think if they did fight again, then Volkanovski would probably just take the mistakes he made and put them right.
Yeah, because I think a lot of it, he was focusing on what Islam was doing to the point where then he's catching those shots, pinging his head back. And as much as he's grinning and smiling it off and nodding like, yeah, nice one, the judges... as fucking terrible as terrible as they are, you can't deny that that's a clean shot. Mm. So that's why Nate and Nick were always really good because they were constantly putting something out there. So they're
that
always,
high output, you always look,
and you're scoring points.
A more aggressive fighter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're being more aggro towards their opponent and like they're, so the octagon control, the domination, all the rest of it is, they're sort of ticking all the boxes without even trying because it's their natural stance. Do you know what I mean? So yeah, you could slap someone, it doesn't hurt them, but you've still hit them, you made contact, and that's a point.
Humiliation goes a long way.
Fucking for real. Obviously with the judges.
It was a good event. I mean, I didn't watch it live, but I caught up the next day.
yeah
Who else did you think looked good? I mean, Yaya looked great.
Mate, he seemed to knock Josh off of his, like, he had a game plan.
Mm-hmm.
And he seemed to, it's like he was confident. And obviously, we've seen what Emmett can do. And I think
he was just staying away from it really well.
Yeah.
He got, because he got caught once in the first round, like kind of off the top of the head.
Mate.
And it like wobbled him. But I think despite that one shot, he did really well at just kind of keeping his distance and like picking him off.
He was evasive.
And those body shots.
Dude.
Like the body kicks he was hitting him with were like, oh, lethal.
And I think when someone like Emmett, the way he stood, he's kind of like the letter C.
Yeah.
So you know when it's almost like a baseball's catcher's mitt. You know when like you throw a ball into it, it's like a real nice snug, like thud. It was the most perfect area to hit and he was doing it so well.
I've noticed Emmett's got like his ribs kind of stick out a little bit. Yeah. So I don't know if it is his ribs or it's just like an extra muscle.
He's slightly older now as well. And your body slightly changes. So you know, if you look at wrestlers, so you look at old school wrestlers in the 80s and their pecs were really close together and tight. And obviously a lot of that with the wrestlers was steroids. But as they get older, their breastplate separates, not physically, but their muscle definition.
Yeah, yeah.
And Emmett's got that definite look of an older dude dad bod. Even though he's shredded, not dad bod, a shredded older dude. And it's like up here, isn't it? Like over, just either side of his six pack at the top.
Pointy, like Skeletor. Yeah. Friggin' see him in the weigh-in, his cheeks were like,
yeah,
man,
he's ready for an IV.
He just couldn't really handle Yaya, could he?
Even the leg kicks, did you see him try and shake out? Like, I think he caught two, it could have been the first one, and he's shaking out. And the problem is, even the audience are educated enough to now know it's like that meme of Leonardo DiCaprio, and as soon as you start shaking out, you're like, all I'm going to do now is chop the shit out of that leg.
Mm.
But you got to avoid the fucking, the haymaker.
It'd be interesting because we don't really know the situation with Volkanovski at the minute. He might get a rematch with Makachev but a good matchup obviously is Yair to fight for the featherweight.
Yeah, it'd be wicked.
Yeah, that would be pretty cool. But I still think I'd back Volk.
Yeah, well,
just in terms, I think he can... He's one of those, he can come up with a game plan for anyone, I think.
Yeah, and he's beat Holloway 3 times, who is very similar to Yaya.
Yeah, it's just, I think the kicks of Yaya, like if he can land those body kicks, I think Volkanovski's just really got to like shut him down.
It could be Yaya's time. It could be his coming out parade, because if you think about it, if you were Volk, right, you just had a really fucking close fight, really, really close. And it's against someone that no one thinks can be beat.
Mm.
So you've put on this extra weight. I know obviously he walks around a bit different, but you've trained and it wouldn't be hard to sell that narrative to Dana to go, why don't we do it again? And we can make another however many billion pounds. Or go back down, drop the weight sensibly to the point where you can take on an in prime Yair.
Mm.
What would you do?
What, to like define your legacy?
No, which one would you do? Would you go for Islam again as the rematch because you're already at that
weight? If I was Volk and in my current mindset, I'd take the Islam fight.
All day.
Because he knows he's not over it yet in terms of like knowing that he could probably beat him if he...
Exactly, and he's got nothing to prove.
Right.
He's got nothing to prove against Yair because he's kind of clearing that division out.
Mm.
As much as Yair is now that division that needs clearing again... It's like, where do you stop? He can't just keep staying there if he's moving up. The only problem with Volk is that he's under tall.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's like Frankie Edgar had that problem a little bit.
Like throwing him into the lightweight division.
Yeah. And he's just like, because I mean, I'm not very tall. So I know how it feels because like one of my brothers is 6'2", never been to a gym in his life, built like a brick shit house. And I'm like, how the fuck has this worked? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when you look at like when Frankie Edgar was fighting Ben Henderson and stuff, you're already at a disadvantage. And I think that's where Volk gets a lot of his tenacity from because he's a bit smaller. He's got something more to prove. And obviously against Islam, he's still already smaller, but Islam's not the tallest in the division.
No, I think he's 5'10".
Yeah. Well, you look at like Volk against Connor or something, where Connor is, even though he might not be physically that much taller, he's so much longer and rangier that you're at a bit of a disadvantage because the weapons that you were gifted with from birth are only a certain length. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of difficult because he's got to try and get in close. It's a bit like Josh Emmett. Yeah. Josh tried to get in close because he needed to get closer to be able to perform, but Yair was already too good at keeping him away.
Mm-hmm.
It nullifies a lot of your game plan. It's,
yeah. It's, I think that's why Volk's so good at just like kind of getting in and out quick.
Yeah.
And landing his strikes like really accurate. But he just couldn't quite get him off. Well, on Islam.
The evolution of Volk's game, if you've got an hour to sit and watch all of his fights, it's phenomenal. To go from...
Yeah, like his development.
Mate.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Pretty insane.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that, obviously he's got a great camp, he's got a great group of fighters to train with, but it's his self-belief. And it's the, I don't know if it's stubbornness, I don't know if it's sheer determination, but his self-belief in what he is and what he can do now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to call yourself the pound for pound greatest would normally come off as arrogant in a sport that's been going since 1993, so for 30 years. But I truly believe that he feels that now because he stood on the top of the heap looking down, and he's not doing it in an arrogant kind of way. He's not doing it in a passive way. He's literally saying, look, fucking bring him on.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's like, to beat Max three times, more and more decisively as you go, that's fucking insane.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was a pretty cool event. I mean, yeah, like we said, yeah, it looked great.
Who else stood out for you?
I'm just actually going to bring the card back up.
Go on.
I thought Jack Della Maddalena.
Dude.
Looked great.
One to watch. Put your house mortgage
he
on
looked,
that one.
Really good.
Mate, good he's, record. Yeah, he's...
Who else looked really good? Let me check.
Let's go back through.
Tyson Pedro.
Yeah.
Justin Taffer. Both got knockouts. Where are we going?
Yeah, drop down. Click the more fights.
Where?
There.
Ah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack Della looked good. Yeah, all the like the home guys kind of pulled it out of the bag besides Volkanovski.
Yeah. And Tyson Pedro, because didn't he lose?
I thought he won.
Go to
so
the fight.
Got a knockout?
Play the prelims up here.
Preliminary card. Oh, yeah. He lost decision, didn't he?
Yeah.
And oh shit, yeah.
Modestus looked good.
I remember it now, yeah.
He's put in Australia.
Yeah.
Obviously,
long way to travel.
Fucking long way. And obviously, new, fresh face. And Tyson Pedro is kind of, he's always known for being ready. But he looked tired. He looked tired in the after the first. And I think that Modesta just, he capitalized on that and pulled it through.
Yeah.
But Jack, is it Jack Della?
Jack Della.
But
Maddalena.
Is his first name Jack Della?
No, I think it would be Jack. I assume it's either Della Maddalena is his full surname or...
Mate, his brother looked just Della's like him and looked like his nose could sniff around corners as well. I was like, what the fuck?
Yeah, his nose is bashed in, isn't it?
And I don't know if it's one of them where he's waiting to do a bit of like a Johanna.
Yeah,
like, I'll retire and I'll get my tits done.
Yeah, you don't want to get it done now because like one more fight and this gets smashed in again. Just
mate,
like
well, you look at Vanderlei. You look at Vanderlei's logo and it's his face. And it looks nothing like him because he's had that much plastic surgery.
It's like someone, you know, when you've got a dent on the car and you like, just like pop it back out.
Yeah,
it's it like
looks different to everything
nose,
else.
Yeah.
But he looked, and who he's beaten as well, it's like he's not got the same Darren Till push where they're going like next. But I think he's a problem for anyone.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be a problem for anyone.
Yeah, he looks really calculated when he's fighting.
Yeah.
And against Randy, he was just like reading everything and then like just like landing really good, accurate shots.
And Randy's a legit dude.
Yeah, Randy Brown's good, man.
Really
and,
good. So for him to get him out in the first,
yeah,
that was impressive. So yeah, that was my takeaway. Other than I was disappointed for Volk. Obviously, Islam did what he needed to do. It's impressive. And yeah, it was good, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, Jack Della was—he was the boy.
Yeah, decent. So, obviously, McGregor Chandler's been announced officially now as well.
Yeah, how do you feel
the next
that?
Tough. I feel pretty good about it. I think it's going to be good. I think it'll be entertaining.
I was kind of hoping it was Tony. I want to see Tony just lose his fucking mind with him.
I don't know. I like Michael Chandler in terms of finding him entertaining as a fighter. I don't know how he's going to, what his personality is going to be like within a TV, like, you know, on live,
just
on air,
get,
like reality TV unraveled. Scene. Yeah, I don't know. I think McGregor could probably get to him, but yeah, it's going to be interesting. Yeah, it'll be interesting. In terms of the fight, I think it's a really good matchup as well as like an end result.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that I'd rather watch that than Tony McGregor.
I suppose it's like we said before, I think Tony's a slightly, it's a bit more of an ease in back into the sport, whereas Chandler's going to be, look what Chandler did to Hooker. And it could be a case that he runs. And I mean, Conor's obviously still been training.
Mm.
He's still got that vision. So it's interesting.
It's going to be a great build-up, though.
Mate.
Like, it'll be a very entertaining, like, yeah, I think the whole thing will be very entertaining.
Well,
fun.
I was watching, I can't remember what it was on. There was a clip of Conor and Faber on The Ultimate Fighter, what they did. And Conor was just relentless. Like, they were asking to take a picture of him, and he's like, yeah, get his chin out of shot. Have you got his chin in? Oh, I'll get him in. And the problem was, Faber was grinning through it and sort of laughing it off. But at the same time, you know, normally when you're picking on your brother or sister or something, your mum's like, leave it now. And you give him another one. And he's like, I said, leave it. Dana wasn't doing that. He was laughing along with Conor. And the problem is, for someone who's a bit of a fuckhead, that is an encouragement. And that's like, keep going, keep going. You nearly got him crying. Keep going. And I don't know, like, Mike Chandler puts across this Kellogg's family, Captain America vibe, which I get.
Yeah.
I understand that that is something that happens overseas, but it's not necessarily something we're used to, and it doesn't fit very well in banter. Someone that, like, when he was swearing, he swore once on the mic, because I'll bring him out, and you're like, oh no, you sound like my nan trying to swear to be cool. It's not right. And so, because Conor's got such a clear focus to absolutely fuck with him in every opportunity.
Yeah, that's why I think it would be entertaining, because they'll probably fight a lot.
Yeah.
Because I think McGregor's going to be on his case so much. I mean, it depends what we get out of McGregor, I guess. Depends on, because he's going to be the one who's stirring it up constantly.
And I think he will be a little fucker. With, like, you know, when he fought Poirier the second time, and he was like the most humble Conor you've ever seen.
Yeah,
and he was
like,
they were best friends, and they were going to start a new, like, YouTube channel together and all the rest of it. And then he got beat by him. And then all of a sudden he's fucking fuming again.
Yeah.
It's like, cocaine's a hell of a drug. So with that in mind, I think he's just going to be like,
fuming again.
Yeah. I think he can just naturally drop into that piss takey fuming thing, because it is such a natural state for him to be in, because it's essentially banter. It's just him fucking with someone. But the problem is, when you get a wicked reaction out of someone that completely overreacts to what we can class as a joke, I know that obviously banter can always cut a bit deep.
But then you've got like evil McGregor, where it was like the Habib build up, where it was like pure hate.
Yeah.
And he was like saying, like, you know, not just funny things, but offensive things.
I think that's when you get desperate, though, because someone like Habib doesn't react.
Yeah.
So the worst thing is,
That's what I mean. He was digging.
He was digging his deepest. Yeah, but that's when you show yourself your own insecurities a little bit. Because the problem is, and I've always been quite an outspoken prick, and obviously my wife will tell you that I've upset more people than I've made friends with. But sometimes to pick up on someone's nuance or whatever is quite easy to then highlight that. And if you get someone, and the majority of people I know will give it back as good as they get it, but when you say the same sort of thing to someone that's not ready or not used to it, and they take massive offense, you almost have to go, fuck it, I'm going all in. And you have to, like, just double down and give them it both barrels so they know you're
poking
fucking
the bear.
For real, but you're like burying someone. Or you can't go back, especially Conor can't go back into an apologizing role where he's like, oh, Khabib, I'm sorry, I was only playing, because it's on TV and he's promoting the fight. He wants people to tune in. So for knowing how many people I've upset and how easy you can do it, I don't know how thick-skinned Chandler will be.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I just think it's going to be fun.
I can't wait.
Yeah.
I can't wait. But I
think they start shooting in May, I think. And I think it airs like June time.
Yeah, but we've got social media now as well. So
yeah. Back so in... I didn't watch the well, I didn't watch the last Ultimate Fighter, the Volkanovski. Was it Volkanovski Ortega?
No, Volkanovski Ortega was before that. It was ladies. Nunez, it was Nunez Pena. And Pena.
Yeah.
Because wasn't it Usman's brother?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I was going to...
Was that one of the
tribute.
Questions?
Yeah.
Okay. Usman's brother. Mr. Usman. So, yeah. So, there you go. I must have watched it because I knew the winner. But
yeah, no, I remember that. I watched the fight, the Usman fight.
The finale.
Yeah, but yeah. I didn't watch the series and I didn't watch the previous Volk Ortega. It was a bit shit and like set up kind of shit jokes and stuff.
Yeah, I think, you know when, because Bisping...
like pranking each other and whatnot.
That's it. Yeah. Well, Bisping and Mayhem, they did a season and like they were getting donkeys and putting donkeys in each other's change rooms. And like really, it's not like you can, on the way to training, you'd be like, do you know what I'm going to stop and get? I'm going to stop and get 15 tons of polystyrene beanbag pellets. That'll be funny. And 12 fire extinguishers because it just doesn't happen. So I can't always relax into a program and watch it and take it for what it is because I'm too busy pulling stupid shit out of it. Like continuity fucking kills me. You know, when you're watching a film and it's like, there's an episode on the Inbetweeners when they're at the campsite and they're doing the caravan club.
Oh yeah.
And they're having a conversation. There's a bottle of ketchup there. And it's nearly full. And then it flips to the other side of the table, it's half full.
Oh, right,
then
yeah,
it flips back and it's full. And I'm like, who the fuck is in charge of continuity?
I noticed one on, funny you say that, you know Stand By Me, the film?
Yeah.
There's a scene where he's going into like their treehouse bit at the beginning.
With the cigarettes in his arm.
Yeah, and in one, he's got the cigarettes rolled up in his arm and then the next take is... sleeves rolled down and then it goes back with the cigarettes in his arm again.
Why do I know that?
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's fucking...
Oh, did you know about that one?
Yeah, so I said cigarettes in his arm. Okay. Yeah. But when I was... I did films with Sam, so I was in... We did a film, a full feature film, then we had to do a short film as part of, like, you had to enter it into festivals. So we had to do this short film.
Short film, so, okay.
And the one thing he was drilling home all the time was, remember your shit. Remember what you were wearing. Because my character wore odd shoes the entire time. I turned up and I hadn't had a haircut for like 2 or 3 months. So my hair, as you know, is fucking mental. And it was massive. And I just went into him and went, I need a haircut. He went, no, that's perfect. So I had to leave my hair shit and long for like an extra however many weeks we were filming. But it was horrible. But like literally, the only thing I could remember was, I was wearing a bowling shoe and a flipper. I was wearing a slipper and a fucking Doc Martin boot. And
just
it's like
cut scene and you got a flipper on instead.
Yeah. But he'd literally say to me, because we had to go back and film a scene at the video shop. And he was like, what were you wearing? I'm thinking, fuck, man, I had like a raincoat on. So I looked like the kid out of It. But I had my granddad's flat cap on and like a weird waistcoat and T-shirt and then fucked up. But... I just don't get like how a small independent can do it and like be obsessed with it. But then these are the places it really matters to me and it shouldn't.
Yeah.
It ruins fucking everything. But I think
you still get them in major films now. I mean, well, actually it doesn't really happen that often anymore.
Yeah.
Like maybe some get through, but yeah.
It's not as bad, but it's just, it's a weird continuity frustration. But it's the same, I know we got there by talking about the Ultimate Fighter, but they just... You can't relax because it doesn't feel genuine.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say about the pranks and stuff. It felt set up, and I don't think it really needs that.
No.
I don't know why you would do like the pranks, and I mean, yeah, some of them are funny. I get it, but you wouldn't. You know, like those Amazon programs that they're making about like the football teams, like the Man City one. They made like a Sunderland one, and a few more.
You don't have to make.
But they're
it
very
up.
Serious, and like you know they. Not serious, there's obviously light-hearted moments in it, but you could just make it a little bit so they seem a bit more professional. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly, mate. Well, I think it's the same double-edged sword with the Ultimate Fighter Season 1. Because it holds so much stock from what it did to the sport, what happened was Chris Lieben was in the house. I mean, obviously, you know the cast, you know the people that are in there, but you got Forrest Griffin, right? Shaved half of his head, shoved a banana in his mouth and jumped around and was acting like a fucking idiot in the thing. And like whoever was filming it must have thought, this is fucking gold. Same as the first time they did Big Brother in the UK. Like they didn't know what to expect, but then what they got was above and beyond. So at one point, I think it was Bobby Southwark and Josh Koscheck started kicking off at Chris Lieben, and Chris Lieben had a big drink and he called him a fatherless bastard, which the word bastard means you're fatherless, but either way, he called him a fatherless bastard, and Chris Lieben was already pissed up, fuming and fucking out of control. So I think at this point he'd pissed on someone's bed and then took his sleeping bag outside.
Yeah, I've seen clips of this.
Right. Yeah. So to sleep outside, and then they went and put the hose on him. So they just sent this guy fucking bonkers. But it's not like Dana sat them down before they went in and went, tell you what we'll do. Episode 2, we're going to put your car on bricks. Episode 3, we're going to get you, we're going to get a room full of bees and put you in. Like, it's not stupid shit.
Yeah, yeah.
It's what actually happens. And for me, season 1 was that full of golden nuggets of just watching people, which essentially the majority of us are obsessed with. Like, it doesn't matter if it's Facebook, Instagram or whatever. It could be Geordie Shore, any shit. You are curious to see how someone else is living life. Mm-hmm. And obviously when they were doing that, it made it fascinating because you didn't know what to expect. But when like a whole mariachi band turns up and goes into someone's bedroom to wake someone up before a fight, you're like, that took some fucking organising. Why have you done that?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And
yeah. I just think it plays a large part in like the sport's integrity as well. Do you know what I mean? You know, when you see athletes,
yeah.
Don't mean to be a downer or anything, but like how they act behind closed doors is like a reflection on, you know, just as they are as people and athletes. Yeah. So I don't think like broadcasting that and making it a something people can, you know,
it's not a spectacle.
Yeah, it's making it a spectacle. Yeah. Yeah,
well, you know, when you look at someone like Court McGee.
Mm.
So Court McGee was on The Ultimate Fighter, and he really suffered with addiction.
Mm.
So majority of the people that go into The Ultimate Fighter are probably slightly younger, and a lot of them have been from a troubled background or they've had interesting backgrounds. Not yeah, all yeah. of them, but some of them, because obviously they're people. But one of the main things with The Ultimate Fighter is they can request pretty much what they want. And people request alcohol or food or steak or whatever, like asparagus. One year someone ordered this big platter and they took a piss inside of it. And I'm like, I mean, I couldn't live there. It'd kill me. But you've got someone like Court McGee that the narrative was more, he wasn't getting involved. He was taking himself out of it. And the problem was he was the older dude in the group, massively suffered with addiction, but then won. And like to watch that, even though all this other crazy shit's going off in the background, to try and almost like connect with someone on a personal level to think, fuck me, man, what you've been through and now what you've achieving, the ratings aren't reflecting that with his story because someone's pissing in a bowl of fruit. Do you know what I mean?
And yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like you say, it reflects on the sport a bit, but you've got to have the entertainment. But I think organically when that happens itself is so much more satisfying than when... It's like Top Gear. Top Gear got ruined because they're like, who's going to win the race? And there's already a cameraman fucking 3 miles up the road. You're like, you know who's going to win the fucking race, dickhead. You're there. And it's fake. It just feels put on. And it's like...
But that's the thing. I don't think they need... In a sport that's so like, you know...
Extreme.
Like extreme and, you know, that's the entertainment. Like, I don't think they should kind of include that. It's a nice like cutaway, you know, something I guess that keeps the viewers coming in. But yeah...
People fucking with each other, I get.
Yeah, yeah.
Starting fights in the house, like this one where, not Lodens and Kane, that's season 1.
Yeah, maybe because I'm not massively into reality TV, so it's just, maybe it's that element, but yeah.
But it's like when one of the guys, I can't remember his name, he's in bare knuckle now, and he gets knocked out in the bathroom. He's like, hit me, and he gets knocked out cold.
Yeah. Forgot his name.
I know it's on the tip of my tongue, and I know whoever's screaming at the screen, shout out to you, Steve Smith. Someone will be screaming now to let me know the answer, but he got knocked out cold, but he's still in the thing. And it's like anyone who gets knocked out like that is suspended because of concussion and all the rest of it. But you think, what the fuck? But it's still interesting because I don't think Dana said, knock him out.
Yeah.
Knock him out in the bathroom tonight. Yeah. But the other shit with like people fucking with each other that looks set up is just feels kind of cheap.
Mm.
But talking of cheap, have you been watching Power Slap?
Oh, God, yeah. I mean, I've seen that. I mean, oh, God, no, I haven't been watching it. But
good.
Last thing I've heard about it is that dude got done for cocaine use.
The one who is sponsored by Tony Montana. What are you doing? And he goes over to the chalk ball. What was that?
It's not really chalk.
It's not chalk. It's just coke. I don't know. I'm not watching it, but I'm seeing it on Insta. And
well, they're pushing it like loads on the UFC Instagram.
Mate, and I think...
Like every other video I've seen is power slap.
And I don't know if it's just Dana just having the kind of fuck you money that back in the day when they set up the UFC, everything was a struggle. He was passionately defensive of this sport that he cares about so much because so many people interpreted it in the wrong way.
Mm.
This is cockfighting. This is bullshit. This is cage. This is barbaric. All that nonsense, right? And realistically... When you've got people like Rich Franklin, who's a math teacher, he's not fucking barbaric. This guy is trained and he's a professional in this sport, and there's less damage in the narrative that you used to lead with is boxing, where you get hit in the head 120 times in a fight, whereas one shot could finish it or whatever it is, or submission. So I was completely on board. Whereas I struggle to see anyone that can sit down and justify slap fighting to a point where they're like, yeah, this is a legitimate sport that's got legs, because... No, like that's literally head trauma, that you are snapping someone's neck to the point where they're rendered unconscious from a slap. But it's how they go down and the positions that they fall in.
Yeah, it's like they get knocked. I mean, you've seen people like fold in the UFC and like get clean knockout. But this is like, yeah, it's that. But like, it seems like every time he gets slapped, someone ends up like that. So it's just, yeah, it's just weird.
That in the UFC, you could see someone get rocked and then stop with a body kick or finished on the ground or just knocked out. I get it. But that is a fight and you can defend.
But
and
that's
the
thing, yeah. Like when you're fighting, obviously the best result is a knockout, right?
Of course.
Like because it's the quickest, most efficient way to win. But there's not a chance for someone to defend that. And then you can still dominate someone in other ways without knocking them out.
Yeah.
It's just, it just takes that whole thing out of the equation.
Or you can defend yourself or move a bit. Like, I saw one guy, he got slapped, let's say right here, okay, on the point of his chin. He caught one, nearly knocked him out, and then had to stand there and put his arms behind his back to take another one. And it's like, the knockouts, they're not pinpoint on exactly the same spot of trauma. So... I don't know if he's just got himself in bed with this so much and he's dug his heels in so hard that he could never admit that he was wrong or never turn. Because I think if Bellator or ONE or PFL or anyone else made this decision, he would have called them from a fucking pig to a dog. He would have been like, oh, just disgusting, the worst. But because he's the one who's now on it, he's so stubborn that he's never going to go, do you know what?
I don't know if they'll do a second season, but we'll see. I hope they don't.
I know that I saw the ratings for an episode, or I don't know if it's the latest episode, because it could have been last week, that they were trying to chase the AEW, which is wrestling, I think. I'm pretty sure it's, I'm not sure, obviously I fell out of wrestling for a long time ago. AEW, pretty sure it's wrestling, and it's on the same network that Slap.
Right, okay.
Power slaps on.
Is it CBS?
I'm not sure. One of them. So at the first, like let's say that AEW was getting like 800,000 and Slap was getting something like 500 or 400. The last one was really low, apparently.
Yeah.
But it's one of them. I mean, you never fucking know. And when Uncle Dana's got the amount of money he can put behind it, I always like seeing the purses being released on any fight. I like to see what they've taken on the gate. I'm interested in all of that, just to see how people are getting looked after and obviously what they're supporting and how they're surviving. Obviously, there's not been anything out yet for slap fighting, but I'd be interested to see how much these people are being paid, because like a fight camp is what, 3 months?
Yeah, 12 weeks, 8 weeks.
Let's say 2 or 3 months. You got coaches, you got gyms, you got different places, memberships, equipment, and I don't know how much you can train to slap as much as obviously you can train upper body.
Well, have you seen them doing the spar and the training?
Just on a mitt.
just on one mitt.
Yeah, but like, if you're going to have one fight which is potentially less than a minute long, like. are you going to get more money because you can do it less? But that's not normally the case in the UFC, is it? So it's going to be less money because, well, you're only out there, for a minute. It's, I don't know, man. I just, something's not settled right with me.
It'd be interesting to see what the what people are getting paid for it. I don't think that's public knowledge, is it? But yeah, why? Surely they're not getting paid more money than UFC fighters, and if they are, it's pretty ridiculous.
It would be fucking insane if they are, because it's not. I don't think it's a sustainable thing.
Mm.
Like, as much as you've got people who have got like hard heads and they can take a slap, it's not. You don't need to print nylon shirts and fucking and flash it all over a NASCAR.
Yeah.
It just feels kind of dirty. But I think the worst thing that's going to happen is someone's going to get badly injured.
And well, that's the thing, isn't it? I think it's being reviewed to whether it's even safe. All right.
Dana's like, he's even muddied the waters in Vegas. Mm. I mean, to be able to do that, that's an impressive
thing. I mean, surely it would have been approved before they could actually do it.
But who's on the board? And who do Dana know really fucking well? Do you know what I mean? Like, think about it. Vegas is their backyard. They know everyone.
Mm.
Like,
yeah.
If I've got a friend in the council and I want planning permission on something, I'm going to my fucking friend. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'm not saying they have, but it just feels weird. So, yeah, I thought it was interesting that he got banned for 9 months for cocaine. It's like, it's a weird figure, and it's weird that, was he in the house snorting? Was he doing rails in the house? Mm. And been like, yeah, let's go slap.
Just need to like, yeah, I think eventually, just with Dana, like, this is like kind of his little idea and baby, I assume. I don't know whether he's just the face of it or like...
Yeah, I don't know.
He funds it, but yeah, like with that and then the whole thing in New Year's.
Well, I'd love to see
like
his missus...
Sooner or later, he's going to be like kind of Donald Trump. Yeah. Just like...
I'd love to see his missus have a go. Just that one slap. Do you know what I mean? Like New Year's Eve this year, she'll get to get one back. Just like season two premiere. Mrs. White. Yeah. Cracking across the chops.
New Year's, the revenge.
Mate, that would be sick. I'd tune in for that one. Big time. Go on, what else?
Yeah, I was going to say, because I think we're a bit short for time, so I was just going to end it on what fights you're looking forward to that are coming up.
What have we got? What is there?
I'm surprised. The next pay-per-view is UFC 256. 285. 285, Jones Gann. And then after that's UFC London.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to that because I like it when it's over. It's just good because you get a nice vibe and it's on a Saturday night so you can sit and actually watch it rather than not see it. And I'm looking forward to Jones being back. I think Jones being back, Connor being back, he's got that nice little injection because the people that have been like keeping the ship afloat have been doing a good job. But you know when you've got people that you know they're not retired, you know they're not done, it's like when you've got no Ngannou, no Jones, no Connor, and then a load of people have retired.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's the changing of the guard a little bit. But I can appreciate that, say like Aldo's gone.
Yeah, yeah.
He's retired. He's going to go and box, which is fantastic and fascinating and cool and all the rest of it. But I'm not sat wondering what's next.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I'm not expecting him to come back. Whereas because Jones is there and going through his own sort of hardships and troubles and all the rest of it, I still want to, well, when are you going to fight again? Because to me, I want to see him perform again. Same as Ngannou, same as Connor. It's not that I'm a massive fan of Connor. It's just that it's always interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The build-up's always fascinating. The narrative's always fascinating. And then he normally performs to some degree or another. He either, like the last two are Poirier's looked incredible. But if it's not the right dance partner, then it's not the same sort of feel. Do you know what I mean? Like the Derek Lewis Spivak thing the other day. No doubt Derek Lewis is a great fighter. But he just, he sent like he got in on, this is rubbish.
Yeah, it broke him. Broke him pretty quick as well. Yeah,
but it wasn't, there didn't seem to be the same amount of damage. Like when he was against Tai Tuivasa, he kept coming back and coming back and he wasn't stopping with wanting to engage.
Mm.
Whereas with Sergey, he's like, ugh. Nah,
I don't know what's next for Derek Lewis. I think he's just going to be there as the guy to like a hurdle, the gatekeeper hurdle to get over.
Yeah, because I think it bothered him what DC said. DC said he's not top five.
Mm.
And it really fucking bothered him. Yeah. And the problem is, unfortunately, you need a thick skin in the game. And obviously, Derek Lewis is a funny guy, so he can naturally throw something off the cuff. But I think it genuinely bothered him. And then to feel that and then not perform, it probably bothered him even more.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But
yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so Jones, Connor, and well, anyone coming back, I'm looking forward to it. And obviously, yeah.
There's a lot of good things coming up. And I think we're going to try and get down for like UFC London.
Yeah, yeah.
If we can see who's around there to grab and maybe set up there with the podcast, or
we should do a live one. We should get like a little cafe or something.
Yeah, yeah.
See if any of you would be up for that. So just come in and we can fire some questions. Yeah,
if anyone's got any ideas of like guests you'd like to maybe see on the podcast, and we could, you know, reach out and try and get those guys on. So let us know in the comments if there's anyone that...
Yeah,
that,
tell us what you're looking forward to as yeah, well. Exactly, and how you're finding it, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, sorry, I had to cut it short a little bit today. Just Dan's off training with Veronica at the minute.
This is it, so. Man. It's all about UFC London, and we've got to make sure that Lady V is ready, so...
Yeah, exactly.
That's it. But a pleasure as always. And yeah, we'll what, see you next week from a new location?
Yeah, we'll be back next week, and it's going to be a bit of a change up in studio and set up, so yeah, see you there.
Secrets. Nice one. Yeah. Take easy, dude.
Nice one, man. Take care.
I felt like a reptile. Like a reptile. I felt like a reptile.